Okay, thanks David for introducing me and also doing some of my job, introducing the subject. So this is the subject of what is called now Coulomb glasses. I'll explain it more. It's the physics of very strongly disordered interacting Fermi systems. So again, there was a program on ordinary glasses here very recently. I won't go into all the history of what is a glass here and stories about the Chinese and the Phoenicians, which are quite nice. We are talking about something similar but very different, and it's broadly maybe in the same category as ordinary glasses, but it's not quite the same. So I'll first say it in words. In a few minutes, I'll write you on Hamiltonian, because that must be done. And by the way, what I plan to do is devote, as they say, the bigger half of the talk to generalities. And in the maybe last third to half, I discuss work that we did, and we means I just want to put down the names, because it's important. So there was those in the program already met Ariel Amir, which is our phenomenal graduate student, and he's a joint student of Yuval Oreg and myself. So if there is time, I'll talk a little bit about what he accomplished during his PhD. But I would like to give you some feel. What are we talking about? And why it is interesting, and also how it somehow fits in the general framework of interesting, non-trivial, not easy to solve questions in condensed matter physics. So let's start generally. We have a picture where you have a very strongly disordered solid. The solid is of course made of ions, atoms, what have you. Within this thing move some electrons. What the electrons see is a very random, very strongly disordered potential. We know by now, due to Phil Anderson, that in a very strong potential, all the electronic states are localized. Actually, this is more interesting than meets the eye, and what I'm going to say now is basically incorrect. But think about it as having some sites in the big system. I'll come back to this picture later. These sites are randomly placed. And on each site, there is a little wave function which decays, doesn't reach to infinity. So we know that this thing at t equals zero is an insulator. I talk a lot about how finite temperature gives small finite conductivity to this system, and that conductivity is interesting in its own right. It's also interesting as a diagnostic. This is something that does not exist, or almost doesn't exist, very, very negligible in window glass, but you can measure at finite temperature the conductivity, and the conductivity gives you interesting information on the electrons, and you can change it easily and you can play with it. Of course, much of the talk will be on that. And that's a nice degree of freedom which you do not have in ordinary glasses. Now, except for the fact that the constituents are electrons, there is another very major difference, which was already implicit in what I said, between this and ordinary glass. Ordinary glass, you have interacting units, atoms, molecules, and the interactions are complex. The system is not homogeneous, maybe. As a result of that, these constituents make for themselves a random structure. Now, sometimes they can make a crystal, a lattice, but very often, especially if you take almost anything and quench it quickly enough, they don't have time to crystallize, they'll fall into some structure, some random structure. Here, the electrons do not make for themselves the random structure, although, of course, they do influence this random structure quite a bit. As I discussed, that's not really a part of the problem.
but
they are given already strong random potential which they move in. So some of you are free of calculating the structure which is induced by the complex interaction. The structure is already calculated, and within that structure you have much lighter things, electrons, which are moving, but they are not really moving very much. No, they are not fantastically mobile. They at zero temperature, when there is nothing else, they just sit. Every electron sits in its own localized state, and that's it. At finite temperatures, these electrons usually interact with some bath, usually a boson bath, phonons, photons, what have you. And those induce transitions I'll talk a lot about them, among these localized states, very similar to atomic transitions. And here quantum mechanics come in all its glory. And those transitions make the electrons hop between one localized position to another. And that's responsible to the two main physical properties that I'd like to discuss. So one is the relaxation. One is the, let's say, transport. Electronic transport. So you see immediately that this transport is not the same as in ordinary conductors, metals, for example, where you have electrons that extend over the whole system. Here they are localized. They get a kick once in a while from a boson excitation and jump to another state. And it's this jumping that gives you a small conductivity, which you can measure. And it really tells you a lot about what's happening. So this is really the real problem, the dynamics. In order to understand that, you want first to understand the statics of the problem. And it turns out that the static of this problem is, again, complex and very non-trivial. And that's due to a phenomenon that was discovered by three people sitting in the audience, Mike Pollack, Alyosha Efros, and Boris Sklovsky. And what it says is that in this system we have an approximate Fermi level, or in some sense it's even exact. And around that Fermi level, if you look at the density of one electron states, there is a singularity in the density. It goes to zero at that Fermi level in a typical way, in a parallel way. And it means that there are not so many single electron excitations at low temperatures. And that's really something very, very important, because it dictates all the properties of the system. And it's always at the Fermi level. If you put more electrons in the system and make the Fermi level higher, this singularity will move with the Fermi level and stay there, near the Fermi level. In that, it's similar to many singularities like that we know and love in other systems. I think a nice one, again, discovered by a person here, is the Altshuler-Aronov singularities in the density of states of weakly disordered metals. There is all the Fermi edge singularities, etc., in metals. And you may ask, it sounds very mysterious. How does this singularity know to put itself just at the Fermi level? And the answer, of course, is very simple. It's near the Fermi level, which at low temperatures, you have easily excitations from a little below to a little above. So in any physics thing, in anything that you do, say perturbation theory, these processes of electron-hole interactions, the low energy tail of them always centered around the Fermi level. If you move the Fermi level, you move the center of these processes. So it's not really so miraculous that you have something nailed to the Fermi level. Nevertheless, it is very interesting, and it's of course, at low temperatures, you know, for electrons, low temperatures can include easily room temperature. It will really play an important role in their dynamics. So this is more or less the introduction. Now, as a result of all this, these glasses, similarly to ordinary glasses, develop very long response and relaxation times. You can observe these glasses to change and move with the scales of days, weeks, really determined by the, you know, from an experimental by the stability of the system, or maybe even by the lifetime of the student and things like that. So actually there is a whole range of very, very long times. And I'd like just to say, you know, that it's not a big deal to get a long time, because at any time you have exponential activation, Arrhenius law, e to the minus barrier over t, if the barrier is large, you have long times. Now, having said that, I will also say that there is still a question how to make them even longer, and that's one of the very interesting open questions in this field, and I'll come back to it. And it's very likely that you know, the advanced quantum effects, in some sense, play an important role in slowing down the electronic glasses even more than without them. But we'll get that to that a little later. Okay, so I think that was more or less, you know, the playground of what I'd like to talk about. I'll write down a model. The model is very similar to what is called in other fields, the random fieldizing model. It's, you have these sites, I, and you have, now actually it's a great simplification, sum over I, epsilon I n I, plus a sum prime there is, of course, some coupling constant. Now, notice that here we are talking, we already made a tremendous simplification, and we'll not stay with it always. We'll have to do some more. All these NIs are 0 and 1. There is no other thing in this Hamiltonian yet. It will come. But at this stage, everything commutes with everything. So the NIs are just 0 and 1. And you should believe me that even this simple caricature is already quite complicated and takes some time to study. You know, very often people take the average n out and it's just a fluctuation of n, but that's a detail. So more things will follow, but this is really a basic thing. And
what are random here, RIJ?
Rij are random and epsilon I are random. Both of them are strongly random. These are, you know, in one model they are just points thrown out randomly on a plane, on a cube, or whatever. The distances are random, the positions are random, and so the field that an electron feels here is not the same here and there, because it sees the environment which the electron sees is very, very different in principle. That's the model. So let's first, to look our thinking, let's talk about what I like to call the statics. And the relevant concept here is the single electron. And abbreviate is DOS. DOS stands for density of states. Now, you know that if you take an interacting system, there are quite a few densities of states you can talk about. There is density of states of electron-hole interactions, for example. There is the thermodynamic density of states. This is the single particle density of states. What is it? If you inject an electron into the system, it will find the first single particle state and get into it. Actually, this is done by experimentalists, in principle, by tunneling experiments. If you take an electron out, it's like injecting a hole, and again, there's a state like that. The results of Pollack, Efros, and Shklovsky from many, many years ago was that this thing, maybe we call it mi of E, has a singularity near the Fermi level, and that singularity says that mi of E is proportional to E minus E Fermi. E Fermi is just more or less the last, you see there are these states, the last full state is here and the next empty state is there. And the Fermi level, say, zero temperature is in between. So there is still a Fermi level in this interacting system. So it's E minus EF to the power D minus one with a coefficient. Some coefficient, and that coefficient with all the units has been calculated, for example, by EFOS. So it's, I think 2 over pi and 2d or something like that. So it's a very well-defined prediction. And you see, it's really dramatic because it says that this knee around the Fermi level is like that or like that. 1d especially, and we won't talk very much about it. And clearly, anything you want to do the system at temperatures comparable to that will be sensitive to the to that this density of states. What Effort and Slovsky continue to do following that is use this density of states to compute the conductivity, and I'll come back to that, and obtain a very interesting result, which seems to agree with quite several experiments. But this is really, this derivation is really not kosher at all, because conductivity is not determined by such a single particle density of states, bring a particle from the outside. What conductivity does, it moves particles between different states in the system. So it's closer to what is called electron-hole densities of states and things like that. Conductivity is, after all, just the DC conductivity is the zero frequency limit of AC conductivity, which is absorption from an electromagnetic field. And so the electromagnetic field raises an electron from a state below to a state above the Fermi level at low temperatures. And therefore it looks at a different density of states. And it's not clear that you can use this in order to calculate the conductivity. Still, it gives interesting results, and it can be discussed also in other ways, which, if I have time, I'll go into. I'd like to give you some taste. What is this due to? No, it's clearly due to some processes near the Fermi level. Now, the argument that Effort and Slovsky invented, it was, I think, 74 or some years ago, was, let's take the ground state of the system. The ground state of the system, you know, these N's will be full up to a point and empty. You know that. And by definition, this ground state has to be stable against taking an electron from a full state or an empty state. If it's not, if it can spontaneously excite electrons, then it's not a ground state. So this requirement puts a very non-trivial constraint on the density of states near the Fermi level. And I'd like to you know, give you the bare bones of the argument, which is really a good one, although it really results only in an upper bound. So what we are going to do, we are going to call the single particle levels, we are going to call them EI. EI is not epsilon I, it's epsilon I dressed by appropriate interaction. Now, if you think what happens if I take an electron from a state here, state there, again, I should say, by definition, the EI are the energies of those levels. So what happens? I take the electron from here to there. I would like to put it on the energy EJ. This is EJ and this is EI. But when I take it away, I created a hole in that state. And the energy of the state J has changed. By how much it has changed? The electron that was here and interacting with it is no longer there. So the energy of excitation of I to J, and you know, to understand that is already 90% of understanding what happens, is epsilon J minus epsilon I minus E square over RIJ. Why? Because after, as again, I repeat, after I put the electron here, I've changed the energies of the I and J states. You might say you created an electron hole pair, and that's the energy of this pair. Now, you see, therefore, that if EJ and EI are too close to each other, and RIJ is small, this becomes negative. It becomes negative, it means that you did not have the correct ground state. So in order to have a ground state at all, you need to have less states around here so that this catastrophe will not happen. So, you know, you take that and do a little calculation following it, and you obtain such results. So it's really a very, but you know, all we can say is that at this stage is that there cannot be more states near the Fermi level. There can be less, so it's really an upper bound on the density of states. It seems, and now there are more and more rigorous proofs, that the estimates that this S kind of estimate is exact for this model. So the.
Nowhere did you invoke anything about a disorder.
Well, the disorder actually defines the problem. You know, the states I, the epsilon I, where the states sit is determined by the disorder.
I understand. But then you said nothing in arguing for that.
Well,
Arlo behavior about the amount of disorder. It could be zero.
Well, the only thing, if it were zero, you would have a Bloch or something of that sort.
So
you.
Where did the disorder come?
It's implicit. It's buried in the assumption that my states are like this. You know, if there were no disorder, if you have a crystal, you have a Bloch states, and then the electron states are extended all over. So the disorder actually defines the problem to start with. So it gives you a set of EIs without interactions. And those EIs are eigenenergies of Anderson localized states. Once we understood that, we forget, and we just go into this childish thing at this stage, and we don't have to talk about it anymore. But if it were not there, I would not get this model at all. I would get something which we know in.
Essential is localization.
Yes, absolutely. Now, strong disorder is sufficient. It's probably also necessary, but this is not the discussion we should go into right now. All right? So it's this. So first of all, you see that it's not hard to understand this lack of states near the Fermi level. And it's also clear why it is at the Fermi level, because it's there where you can make these cheap excitations, and if they are too cheap, then if you get them not only for free, but they are paying you to make them, you have not started with the correct ground state. By the way, the word ground state is also a little bit of a misnomer, because such systems can have, at least if they are finite, they have a ground state, but they have a huge number of states for large n, large number of elements in the system. You have a lot of states which are almost ground state, or very close to the ground state. People have looked at that a lot, and you know, part of the theory is the, especially the numerics, is to count some kind of density of ground states near zero, and it's huge and it's increasing with energy. It's not ground state, it's a low-lying states, and some of them are metastable. And as you know, much of the physics of glass lies in the fact that you have such metastable states. But we'll talk about that if and when we will have to. But anyway, so we kind of understand now why there is such a thing. And we also understand that this is physically very, very relevant. It's not just a nice statement. It influences the behavior of the system at what we call low temperatures, which in real life can be quite reasonable, such as room temperature. Now, okay, so this is the statics. Now, what about dynamics? Dynamics means that I want to move electrons on a general level between one localized state to another. You cannot do that with this Hamiltonian. This is a static Hamiltonian. what happens is the system, and now I'll use a picture instead of writing the Hamiltonian, every one of you can do it himself or herself. So, you know, I have here two states. I have the state, the state I and the state J. And let's suppose for a second that EJ is the full energy of the single electron state, is larger than EI. I would like to, after that we'll take the opposite way, we like to move the electron from here to there. The way it's done is by some bosonic excitation, usually it's a phonon, it's a lattice vibration, that hits this electron and makes it jump from here to there. And this is a continuum, so it conserves energy, and we have a real transition. So I won't write it down, but in order to do that, you have to have something like a CJ dagger CI times AQ sum over I, J, and Q with some coupling constant. So this is the plus. So this is the ordinary thing. And this Hamiltonian can induce transitions leading to excitation. And it's also the Hamiltonian that will be responsible for relaxation. If you prepare the system not in the best state temperature T, it has to make transitions very often down. So this can make transitions up and down. You all remember that for transition up are proportional to the number of excited bosons here. Transition down are not, because you have spontaneous transition. It's really here where quantum mechanics is indispensable. So I won't write it down, but it's just the factors of n phonon for spontaneous, which I would call relaxation, and n phonon plus one. No, I'm sorry. And n phonon plus excitation. And that's crucial for conductivity. So electron motion is governed by not just, this is not enough, you have to put in coupling to something, and it's always modeled with a boson bath. And this coupling will introduce transitions, introduce dynamics, and everything. I just tell you a little bit about how one gets some measurable things, conductivity of the system, out of this picture that I more or less outlined so far. The cheapest way is to say, okay, if I know the rate of jump between here and there, I know the typical distance which you cover in space, so Rij. And so, you know, there are many such jumps in the system. And then you know that these electrons will now have finite diffusion. It's a jump diffusion. So the transport is jump diffusion. With a step which is more or less of the order of the distance of, say, start with, we talk about nearest neighbor states, then we talk about other things. So let's say that the jump is about r nearest neighbor. And you know that the diffusion constant is on the order of the jump square over the time, the dwell time of an electron on a site. This is the diffusion constant. If you know the diffusion constant, you know the conductivity, because great Einstein told us that for Fermi systems, it's E squared d times the density of states. So that's a very easy way to estimate the conductivity of the system. And I just, in a minute, I'll show you, tell you pictorially, what is it? How does it depend on parameters? There is a more systematic way to do it, which was invented by Abrams many years ago. And this is to say that each of these little bonds has a conductance which is proportional to the rate of jump. This you can really show. So you replace this by a conductance or by a resistance. So the whole system becomes a network, a random network of resistances. And then what you have to do is to solve a random network of resistances, which is very easy to do numerically. And clever analytical methods using percolation have been developed for it. And you know, the two things give you more or less the same. Now, so understand how conductance occurs in principle. How does it depend, say, on temperature? Okay, so you would say, here, I just jump from here to there, so I need to take this coupling constant square times, if I need the number of phonons, or number of phonons plus one, and the matrix element, which is all in the lambda, between this and that. So you need, I just want to make it clear to here that without overlap between of these two localized states, there will be no jump, because there will be no matrix element. So this matrix element will determine the conductivity, and that's what everybody thought, and there is a typical barrier. That means that typically the conductivity will be activated. Activated means Arrhenius. But then came Mr. Mott a few years later, after people understood this, said, no, this is not exactly true, and gave a very ingenious argument showing that the conductivity should really go like e to the minus something else. Let's call it A over temperature to the power number of dimensions plus one. And some years later came F. Oskrovsky and says, this is without interactions. With interactions, it should go like e to the b over t to the half. And that calculation is one. To do this calculation in a proper way with the correct density of states and everything is something that has not been done yet. Is a major open problem in this business. I'm sorry, it should be minus. So there are more or less three principal temperature dependencies that one might expect. And all of them are observed in different systems. There are many, I didn't say in the beginning, but there are quite a few such electronic glasses ranging from oxides to thin films of bismuth, lead, a lot of granular systems, and more are coming. And in some range in each of them, you can find any of these dependencies. And sometimes people even report a power different from this and different from that. So the transport is really not understood well at this stage. And the first thing is to give a good theory to this. The other thing is to see whether there is something else, which is observed but not expected by theory. So this is in a nutshell what the simple dynamics is, the conductivity. Now, what about relaxation?
In terms of the question?
Yes.
Isn't there a relationship between the conductivity and the diffusion constant? Which density of states comes in there? Is that the single particle?
It should not be the single particle. I should maybe call it nu bar. You're right. I mean, that's part of the business. Absolutely. Now, what happened with relaxation? So there are really two major things, and both of them need understanding, and this understanding, I think, really needs a paradigm, because we do not, in ordinary solid state physics, we do not have such things. So first of all, there is extreme slowness. So there are very long times. And the second one is system has memory. The system remembers what was done to it time ago, last week. And if you can make systematic, and I talk about them, Until when do I have? About 20 minutes. Not too much, but... So this is really, I think, the most fascinating thing. And experimentalists are really kind to us. They provided some protocols for doing systematically experiments that show age, that show this, and some of them is sometimes called aging. The system knows its age. You put it in a state, you let it age in that state for a while. Some of us have experienced that in person. And your properties still remember, you know, how you were born and when you was born, you were born. So aging is a very fascinating thing, and I'll talk soon about that more. And we must discuss these things. Now, not only is it extremely slow, but there is no characteristic time. So what is there? What is there? I think that the new needed picture, which I mean, everyone knows and expects, is there is a spectrum of relaxation time. In a sense, this property that you have in that spectrum for a large system is continuous. So, you know, you have a lot of relaxation times. Some of them are quick and they happen quickly, but they are very, very slow ones. The slow ones you can see only if you wait enough time for them, and if there is one relaxation, if there is, sorry, not one, if there is a range of year, you'll have to wait a year. So this is really, you know, this is perhaps the most important take-home statement of this talk, is that such glassy systems have a continuous broad spectrum of relaxation times. And the more important thing is that it also extends to huge values. And I'll give you soon a model for that. But this is what we have to face. When we talk about the slowness of changes, these changes sometimes, very often, are logarithmic in time. And in many other cases, they go like what people call stretch exponential to the minus time to the power. So it doesn't decay like an exponential, but like a stretch exponential. How can you get such things? Of course, if the spectrum of taus is appropriate, you prepare the system in some combination of eigenmodes of decay, and if the spectrum is right, it will give you, in many cases, this, in other cases, that. Now we understand very well what leads to that. We start to understand what may lead to that. And just different spectra of relaxation times or relaxation rates. It's easier to talk about relaxation rates, inverse times. So the name of the game is really to understand the spectrum, the continuous spectrum of relaxation rates in such a glassy system. If you know that, it will tell you a lot. And the easiest example, not so easy, but the nice example is the example of aging. People call one of, the, there are many, there are a few aging protocols, and one which is very clear and really needs explanation, and I would not discuss it hadn't I known the answer to this one at least. You let the system, first of all, you call it that it equilibrates, it's not clear, it really equilibrates, but you let it sit for a week or whatever, so it's almost in equilibrium. Then there is some external parameter. In our electron glasses, this external parameter actually is something very easy to put on. You put it in a MOSFET, in a field effect transistor geometry, metallic plate above it, put a voltage, it pumps electrons in and out of the system. So here it's called V-gate. In ordinary glasses, people just use an electric field to polarize and measure the electric constant. So that parameter has some value, which is the base value. Then at some point, you switch it on to some other value. You let it stay there for a time, which is called usually T weight. And then you switch it off again. And you measure the property of the system. So, you know, the system has some properties, say a conductance, which at this stage is more or less flattened. Here it increases. Here it turns out it decreases. We'll see how much. And from here on, it again decreases. So it decays back. Sorry, I didn't do it right. I got to correct this, it would be easier. Was here and went like that. So it will go towards its initial value because it you put the external parameter back into where it was. But this is very, very sluggish. So this is slow. And not only it is slow, but it remembers how much you were here. So it's a function of the time that you now take to do the experiment. From here, you measure a new time t. And what happens here depends on t and on the wait time. So you see, if you do this relaxation with a larger wait time, it will be different. The system knows, you know, where it started and how much it was there. That's something that normal systems, non-glassy systems, do not do. We always assume everything is Markovian, etc. So that's the way it is. And then, you know, people, since this field is quite old, the glass field, they say that if it's a function, if the relaxation, this function is a function of T over TW, then it has a name. It's called the full aging. I don't understand why it's called full, but that's the way it's called. So if it's true, and it's true in many, many cases, but not always, it's very nice because you can parameterize the way the system behaves here, both by the time that you take to get to it, and by the time you prepare the system in, about the aging time. So this is really a crucial thing. Now, there are a lot of other protocols. There is a protocol called the too deep, where you change the gate voltage from one position to another. There is another temperature quench, et cetera, et cetera. But this is something very, very well defined. And it really cries for an understanding. And with your permission, I now would like to take 10, 15 minutes and tell you about the picture that mainly Ariel, with the help of his two advisors, has developed for this problem. So the first thing is you want to get some theoretical calculation or estimate of how this spectrum behaves. And now it turns out that in these systems, and you can get it from approximations and from exact solutions on approximate models, and I would love to talk more about that, and probably I'll have a few minutes to do that. What you find is that there is a spectrum of relaxation rate. So I call it P of lambda. Lambda is the relaxation rate, 1 over relaxation time. And it turns out that in many, many systems, this rate, the distribution function of this rate is proportional, roughly proportional to 1 over lambda. So it diverges at small lambda with a divergence like that. Of course, it cannot go forever. So it has to be cut off. We may talk about that. So there is also a cutoff time, which is kind of lambda mean. There's also a lambda max, but that's not important. That's the fast.
So when you vary lambda, means you're varying the initial velocity.
No, the point is you prepare the system It's a huge system. It has many, many relaxation rates. Suppose you... I'll explain. In principle, you know, maybe I should back up. If you perturb the system a little linearly, prepared it, made a change, now you watch what happens. What happens is the perturbation that you introduced externally, if there is such a thing as a spinal relaxation time, there are also relaxation modes. Mathematically speaking, you get it because you get a relaxation vector equation, where n is the vector of all the n's in our case, equal to some matrix times n. That matrix is very, very interesting, and it's related to other things, to Onsager matrix, but we don't go into that. So it will have a spectrum of relaxation rates and relaxation vectors. So you take your perturbation, expand it in the set. It's a continuous set.
That's what your answer is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But your variance is the initial condition.
Yeah. The initial condition means a certain set of weights to get those eigenvectors. And now you let it expand like you do in quantum mechanics, except no I. It's quantum mechanics without I. And it turns out that 1 over lambda, of course, as everybody knows, needs an appropriate limit to log t. Voila, that's what is observed very, very often here. In order to get that, you need something more complicated, and that's really something which is in a work right now. But basically, what happened is that we started with some simple approximations, which seem to be pretty good for this simple problem. And it was found then that the spectrum goes roughly like 1 over lambda. More recently, we have a model which you now can solve exactly, I think, which gives you 1 over lambda with small corrections. So it's really 1 over lambda with small corrections. The corrections are very interesting. They're logarithmic, and they occur in the exponential, and so on and so forth. And they make, of course, this thing normalizable. So you do get the log in some limits. I should say that within this workshop, there was before telling the story, I'll just show you the. I was allowed to show two pictures. I would say that the back of the envelope calculation based on the 1 over lambda distribution of the rates defined as we said now tells you that the function describing this decay is log of 1 plus tw over t. It's a full aging, it's a function of tw over t, and it's this specific function. So we started by fitting this function to the results of indium oxide and gallium aluminum, and Grenet and Delahaye have reached quite similar picture without writing the analytical formulae. And here, so these two systems agree pretty well to that. The line is this function, the trivial function, and here there are results on a variety of systems. So in the beginning, you start with the electronic systems. Indium oxide granular with silicon, there is a little story which probably won't have time to, but Burini told the people in the program all about it. Turns out it all can be, his results can be explained by remembering that the Laplace transform of 1 over lambda with a small cutoff is exponential integral. And then the fit is incredible. But if the cutoff is far enough, you get this log. So these electronic systems do it. Then we were brave enough to try polycarbonate and mylar, where you measure another quantity, And the only adjustable parameter is how to determine the scale of the thing that you measure. And then there is the time over TW with no more parameters. And all these systems universally fit more or less, you know, not exactly, on one curve. So I think there is no doubt that at least in these systems, and now there are a few more ones, the funniest one is the roots of tomatoes, which you can pull and see how they come back, very similar to what Weber did for silk wires when he did the electromagnetic experiment. By the way, he also found the aging, and it was not so far from this. Yes, please.
I'm just curious, what is mylar, what kind of experiment?
This,
mylar,
what,
is that this material you made balloons from?
Well, mylar is a material, I don't know if you have used, I used a lot for transparencies when I was, you know, up to 10 years ago. And you just take this sheet, and this was done in Osherov's group, Doug Osherov's group. You put an electric field on it, and you measure the electric response. So instead of conductivity, you measure the electric response, and it looks quite similar, I would say.
There's a question over there.
Yes. Ah, sorry.
Yeah. My question is, I think the key point is your determination of matrix A. Could you please say a little bit more how you define it?
How you define what?
So matrix A. This is the key point of the theory, right?
Okay, sure, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you ask. Maybe I should answer these questions in the end, because I want to get coherently to the...
And also about...
Yeah. Are you in the program?
Yeah.
You're in the GLASS program?
Me?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not in the program, but I would like to know an example of an electron gas. I mean, mylar, indium oxide, granular...
No, indium oxide, granular aluminum, and silicon are electronic glasses.
I thought, would think of them as either crystals or solids.
Well, they are solids. They are solids, but they are heavily disordered solids. Granular means that it's not aluminum, you know, nice metallic. It's a little granules of aluminum coated by oxide. You know, it's a big mishmash. Mm-hmm. And this big mishmash, that's, I think, is the very remarkable thing. It's something, you know, very disordered, very dirty. It has all sorts of other dirts. And when you make it once more, it will be very different. It has universality. These disordered systems, so different, so bad, so dirty, have universal properties. And, you know, we love universality. I'm not sure that there are stronger cases of universality than such one. There are other things in disordered systems. I still, you know, I first understood some of these things 30 years ago. I'm still marveled by the fact that all these pieces of junk behave universally. I mean, they do. So, theoretical physics has some power.
What's a physical origin for memory and aging? Is there a coherence? Coherence is the origin of
the physical origin is that the system has very slow relaxation times. So what happens is, I don't have time, you know, there is a back of the envelope calculation which I can show you in a minute. But the physics is just this, that if you change the external parameter, at that point the system starts to relax to the new value of the external parameter. Now what happens after time TW, the times shorter than TW have relaxed. The longer times have not relaxed. Now you stop, you go back. But when you go back, the remnant is again starting to relax with the distribution.
Yeah, I think if the origin, real origin, I think it's coherence, because you have long relaxation time. It's because if you one electron jump from EI to EJ, whole system have rearranged. This is why you have very long relaxation time. I think that's because of the whole system is getting coherence. Interaction.
I would not like to, you know, I forgot who said that, but coherence is the word which is most strongly misused in physics. I don't care calling it, but for me coherence is having more than one wave that interfere. Here there is nothing like that. You know, there is an electron hit by something, and by the way, decoherence is induced by inelastic processes. And here the whole thing is a real quantum transition from one state to another. So I hesitate to call it coherent, but I know that people use coherence for many other things. I think it's a little bit semantic, so let's maybe not go deeply into it. But you know, if you want to call it coherence, I'm not going to.
Coherence is a consequence of having many relaxation tones spread over a broad range, and it's aging over part of it.
Yeah, the short relaxation times have made it, and now you change back.
It's not one relaxation.
Yeah. And there is no relationship. You see, in this approximation, every relaxation time is on its own. Okay, just because we have the pictures already, I'll show you just one more picture, if I may. And that's a result of a calculation.
I have one more question about Mylar. I'm really sorry.
No, but yeah, please.
If you're in the program, you have plenty of
opportunities. I have a really serious question. Okay, if I'm in the program, I should shut up. I can't. Huge. Shall I ask my question or not?
Unless it's too specific.
It's, to my knowledge, experiments with Mylar done by double social group, and they have nothing to do with conductance. So that's not electronic system at all, isn't it?
It's not electronic. I didn't say it was electronic. I said.
But then how can you model it like that?
It's not conductance. It's a dielectric function.
Yeah, but you don't have Coulomb interaction. You have nothing.
You don't model it like that. I don't know how to model it. You know, I wish I knew. I'm saying that without, you know, absolute ignorance, knowing nothing about the system, only knowing that there is some physical property which is measured, and there is an external parameter which is changed. You plot here the one before. You plot one on one axis the physical property, whatever it is. On the other axis, you plot ratio of two times, which is independent of anything.
Okay, so you have plotted an analytical model.
Okay, you want to call it, it's no problem with me, but I'm telling you, okay. You do that, then whatever is measured in Mylar, which is very simple, and whatever is measured in indium oxide, which is different, sit on the same universal curve. That's the message.
Okay.
Now, you know, one can like it, or, I mean, I love it, maybe you hate it, but we are not talking here about romantics, you know, and things like that.
Okay.
So, just the physical mechanism for the transport of the electrons is tunneling, isn't it? Or how do they jump?
It's you know, the technical name for it is let me be general, boson assisted tunneling.
Boson assisted.
Yeah, you see, because it's a real transition, as I think I tried to emphasize.
Okay.
You see, you start in this state,
so
it extends and there's some overlap to that state, and something comes and kicks you between this and that. So it's a real. It's a real transition. That's why also I don't like to call it coherence, but it's a real transition.
Okay, that's all good.
Yeah. One more question?
At the end.
At the end, yeah. At the end, I think we can. Now, here I just showed results on this model, which Yuval, Ariel, and I think we solved exactly. And the model is just saying that no, it's a mathematical model. You have these random points. You define a matrix with the entries on these points. There is a non-diagonal matrix element proportional to a function of the distance, which we take to be exponential, because everything here is exponential, exponentially localized under some states. You choose the non-diagonal thing to have a zero mode, because you know that this system is a if you move everything together, nothing happens. And you just look at the eigenvalues of this system, and it turns out you can solve it exactly. It's a random system of a different nature than the usual Gaussian one. But the same method that Dyson used, the moment method, can be used to calculate the distribution function of the eigenmodes. And what you see here is a numerical results. Analytical result, the red curve is doing the moment method to calculate the distribution. And the blue ones, the little green ones, are a very primitive renormalization group procedure, which I'll say a word about it soon. But just to impress you that these things are serious, at least as far as there is also a serious mathematical model which is not bad. It gives the essential exponential dependence on a distance between points. And its exact solution, you see, it's plotted in such a way that 1 over lambda will be a constant. And these are the corrections, and you see there is a cutoff. So we can even get the cutoff of this distribution, which it must have. Just one physical remark is that all this is very, very similar to what some of you may know is another universal engineering thing, which is called 1 over F noise. Almost every system in the world has 1 over F noise. And the common explanation of 1 over F noise is that there is a distribution of barriers. If the distribution of barriers is flat, the distribution of rates is 1 over 8. So very similar. Now, what I said now is the tip of the iceberg for a number of very fascinating mathematics, statistics problem. Some of you may know the distribution of the first digit of large random numbers called Benford law, which was recently used to, maybe not to prove, but to demonstrate that the elections in Iran were fraudulent because the numbers do not satisfy Benford law. In the US, if you cheat on your income tax in a way which doesn't agree with Benford law, they catch you. It's a real thing, you know. So there are some strong statistic laws which are related to this distribution, are related to the fact that in physics we are very much used to Gaussian distributions. Another distribution which is not less useful is the log normal distribution. The log normal goes like 1 over lambda in some limit. Now, why, I just half jokingly, why log normal is so prevalent? It's so prevalent because very often the probability to get something is a product of many, many independent things. And the example I like to do to tease some of my colleagues is, you know, if you want to be a good physicist, you have to be clever, competent, creative, honest, and a few other things. And these are independent. So in the end, the probability is a product of small probabilities. And that's why, you know, that's why it's so hard to find. Nothing is intended.
There are a lot of other questions, right? So this is, Terry, you're more or less finished.
Yeah.
I actually have a question. If you have a glass, presumably if you heat it up, it becomes a liquid, an electron liquid?
Yes, I don't think, I'm not sure if it was done. The experimentalists are probably not here. It should, like every other glass, it should become a liquid. And the liquid will be very interesting. It's a disordered liquid, but possibly will not have this sluggishness.
Yeah.
But I really don't know. I mean, that's my...
It hasn't been explored?
I'm sure some experimentalists did it. Theoreticians haven't talked about it, as far as I know.
But more is known about the glass than the liquid?
Yes, because it's much more interesting. Not that liquid is not. The liquid is... you know, it's a major answer of problem of physics, but glass is even more fascinating.
And what about finite temperature glass transition?
Ah, okay. That's a hard question. If you ask me what I know, I don't know anything about it. I think that this model may very well have it because it's long range. But it's one of the major unsolved problems, which are the glass transition. In ordinary spin glasses, there is experimental proof that there is a glass transition because some nonlinear susceptibility diverges with a beautiful exponent near the transition. Here, it's not really checked. So this is one major unsolved problem. I just mentioned a few other ones since you asked. Another one is whether you have a Frank Condon or Anderson or tonality slowing of relaxations. This is a really big and very interesting issue because when I go from one state to another, this state interacts with others and shifts them a little bit. You know, that's Frank Condon. So the matrix element is knocked down by the overlap of the environment in the initial state and in the final state. And that can make And there are some experimental papers in electron gases that claim that this is crucial to get as long relaxation times as you want. Once you run out of the simple Arrhenius, that's a pure quantum effect, which is interesting, non-trivial, not understood at all. So such things, including more than one particle transition, etc., etc., are major open problems for theoreticians in this. I think experimentalists are doing their own thing very well, and fortunately or unfortunately, providing us with more and more data that we don't understand. Thanks.
Yeah, I was wondering, I wanted to actually make a comment on Mahir's comment about tunneling. I mean, if you think about the quantum Hall effect, it's very similar. I mean, you start off with a system of random distributions of impurities, and there basically you can induce a tunneling by varying the magnetic field, which sort of creates a hopping interval between these different trajectories. I'm wondering if you have, I mean, if this system can be considered as a electron liquid,
then.
As an electron liquid in the sense, this quantum Hall system, so if you can drive through regions.
I mean, the word quantum liquid is a little bit of a name, you know, forgot the English word, sisma is a, you know, something that you do even slightly commercially, electron liquid. Of course, it's a strongly interacting electron system. It's not an ideal gas. It's a fluid. That fluid, some people say that the glass is just a fluid with a huge viscosity. It may be true for some glasses. I'm sure it's not true for all of them, because in some of them you have a phase transition between a more, like the previous question, the fluid type thing and this glassy thing, which actually we don't really understand very well. But you know, in the quantum Hall, it's true that you have these localized states, which and the conductivity deep is exponential. It's an interesting idea. Maybe there is some glassy stuff there or some slow stuff. I don't know of anybody that has treated this. Well, it's Coulomb. It's Coulomb, and there is no screening. So, in principle, each guy is interacting with everyone. Of course, the interaction does fall off like 1/r, but 1/r is very slow. Our great hope is that and it seems to be true, that 1/r is long range enough to can use a mean field, a Hartree approximation, which gives you the 1/λ immediately. So all that are interesting questions.
Is there anything unique about electron glasses? Because a lot of the behaviors you were talking about are applicable to pretty much any glass. It doesn't have to be an electron glass. So like a polymer, disordered polymer would also have a lot of the behaviors you were talking about.
Well, you see, so
your mylar example.
Electron glasses. Well, the unique thing is that we have a good model that we can work on and understand. You see, we tried to fit the same universal picture to other glasses, and it seems to fit. So I don't think it's really unique, but I cannot tell because I have not thought enough about it.
So is it essential to have a particular form of Hamiltonian? Is it essential to have one long-range interaction?
No. Well, the long-range interaction,
next neighbor interactions, for example.
I would say it's sufficient. I'm pretty sure it's not necessary. But exactly, what's the range of validity of this description? I don't know. I'm sure it's more than the little stupid thing I showed here.
Responding to the question about the long memory, you said that it's that the slow relaxation, that memory means slow relaxation. Is that all, or is it Markovian? Is it usually in other parts, memory means a non-Markovian process?
Yeah, it is non-Markovian. And if you wait times that are longer, then the largest relaxation time, the cutoff of this, then it will become Markovian. because simply, you know, all the information about what happened in the past will be erased. So it's non-Markovian as long as we have not exhausted the low end of the relaxation spectrum. That's the way we think about it. You know, maybe we don't see the whole picture, but I think it's pretty good.
In Leo glass, there's actually not a complete disorder. It's actually there's a short range ordering and long range disorder. But it seems in your model, you just complete everything disordered.
Yes.
So it's actually there's a difference. It's not exactly like glass. In like glass, we see the glass. This short order, actual ordering. I don't know. Maybe I don't know whether in your system there are also some kind of ordering, short range ordering. And not like I'm not like crystals, but short range ordering, but long range disordering. That seems not in your model, in your equation, in any coherence.
Well, you know, this is actually exactly the territory that we have only partially gone on. Namely, if you do things by mean field approximation, which is how this started, you neglect short-range correlations. Of course, they are there. Now, it may be that they are not crucial because of the long-range nature of the interaction. You know, it's well known in theory of phase transitions that long-range interactions make the Hartree-type mean field approximation good. And we have some indications that this is the case, but we cannot yet say it. There are too many things in this. It all started with the mean field calculation. Too many good features of this calculation, which look like it's not bad, and that means that the correlation effects, which is the thing that kills the mean field approximation, are there but not crucial. But this is not fully understood. I think the 1 over lambda, or the roughly 1 over lambda, is here to stay.
Okay. Let's thank Jorgen.